Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
An independent review has found that the government's ministers did not take adequate action to stop dawn raids, despite an apology from the Prime Minister for the historic dawn raids in 2021. This week, the government also ruled out announcing a wealth or capital gains tax after the election, despite a study from Inland Revenue which found Aotearoa's wealthiest families paid less than half the amount of tax compared to other New Zealanders. For their weekly catch-up, News and Editorial Director Jess Hopkins asked Immigration Minister Andrew Little about both of these topics. First, she asked Little about what the government's next steps are in addressing the impact of the dawn raids.
Why did the government not formally change immigration laws to make sure that dawn raids are illegal?
Yeah, you know, look, I actually don't have an answer to that question. It didn't happen. It should have done. And I think that's what the report clearly, as you said, has highlighted. That's what we need to fix up. I know after this particular event that happened in April came to light, the then Minister of Immigration, Michael Wood, did send a letter to Immigration New Zealand, clearly spelling out his expectations about the way enforcement of immigration laws should happen, and that any out-of-hours enforcement activity should be an absolute last resort. I think the independent report suggests that should be signalled either in administrative sort of policy guidelines or in legislation. And I think one of the things for Cabinet now is to consider whether we actually need a very firm, legally enforceable guideline about it in legislation. So I expect to take some advice to Cabinet on that in the next few weeks and get that sorted out.
So since the apology in 2021, what discussions have you or the government had with Immigration New Zealand about pausing or stopping dawn raids?
Well, once this event came to light, the rules around out-of-hours enforcement activity changed. So they changed the hours of the day in which enforcement activity will happen. So there's no out-of-hours enforcement activity. At that time, out-of-hours was considered anything before 7 a.m. in the morning and after, I think, around about 6 p.m. in the evening. It's now between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. Secondly, the permission to carry out out-of-hours activity or enforcement activity was escalated in terms of approval. So rather than a compliance manager and a relevant regional manager, it goes to effectively a deputy secretary who's in the second level of management in Immigration New Zealand. It's interesting, the independent report suggested that those permission levels were probably unnecessary because you do want people closer to the front line helping to make those decisions and those judgments. As I prepare advice to Cabinet, I'll talk more to immigration officials about that and see where we go on that particular issue as well.
And what justification, if any, have immigration officials given to the government about why this practice was continuing?
Well, the general explanation is that, they, in terms of enforcing immigration laws, which they do as a matter of fairness to everybody, people who come here under visas, and whether work visas or student visas and what have you, come here with a set of rules and expectations and conditions, and pretty much most people comply with those. So when other people don't, it's a matter of fairness that you uphold the laws that we've got. In terms of people who don't comply with those rules and those conditions, some people are contactable reasonably easily and will get their immigration status sorted out. Other people, it is much more difficult. Some people are deliberately evasive. Others, just their kind of routine of their life, particularly if they're doing shift work and things like that, means that they are very difficult to contact. So compliance officers find a different way to contact them. They tell me that they try to avoid having to track people down in the workplace because there's questions about undermining their dignity and their standing and their face in their workplace. So they try to do it in places where that's not going to be a problem, and home is often the best place for that. That said, we don't want a repeat of what happened in the 1970s, and we do want people to be treated properly and fairly. So that's where we want to go. But I think we also have to accept, with human nature the way it is, there will be some people, it'll be a very, very small number, and it'll be on rare occasions where, in spite of all the best efforts to contact somebody, it is just not possible to do so. And so you do want to have the ability for there to be out-of-hours enforcement, but it should be as an absolute last resort. And when it does happen, it should be reasonable and appropriate and what have you. So it's about getting that guidance right so that the way we enforce our laws has a sense of humanity about it and is fair to people.
Would the government consider granting amnesty to all overstayers as has been suggested by the Green Party and advocates?
That comes up from time to time, and we have done that in the past. It's sort of roughly every 10 years we have this situation where we have a number of people who are overstayers or outside their visa rights. There's always a big question about when you do that. There's a whole bunch of people who have come to New Zealand, sometimes temporarily, sometimes long term, who've done everything right and they've adhered to the conditions of their visas. And then you have some who haven't. And there's always a question of fairness. And there's always a question, too, of fairness to everybody, including those who have stuck to their conditions. And there's a question of the sort of incentive you set up for people who might think, well, gee, if I stick this out long enough, eventually I'm going to get the benefit of an amnesty, so I'll just sort of lie low for a while and see whether this kind of works out. So the whole thing about immigration and immigration law is we're a small country. We do, we have made a deliberate choice to control the flows of people in and out of the country, particularly people who haven't been born here and haven't grown up here and who come here. We have to do that because we don't want our country to be overwhelmed and our public services to be overwhelmed. So if we set in place a set of rules to manage that, then we've got to, there's got to be some integrity to those rules. So questions of amnesties and things like that, we have to think very, very carefully about. We have done it in the past. We wouldn't rule it out in the future, but we have to think about the way we approach it very, very carefully.
How can the Pacific community and those most affected by dawn raids trust that you will take action after you failed to commit to your promise in your apology?
I think what you can see and what the report highlights is that the number of people in the Pacific community who were the target of enforcement action reduced heavily, especially in terms of out-of-hours enforcement. And I think so there has been some acknowledgement of the significance of that. That said, there was this particular case in April where there was out-of-hours enforcement activity. I look at the work that Immigration New Zealand has done, their engagement with Pacific communities. I think they understand they need to have good connections with leaders in those communities and people in those communities. I think they're getting better at that, but more has to be done in that respect. So I think this has been, obviously drawn attention to the fact that what was really the job of us as politicians to give guidance to officials, that we hadn't done that, and we've got to take responsibility for that, and we do.
The Prime Minister also announced this week that the Labour Party would not introduce a wealth or capital gains tax following this year's election. So why has this decision been made?
Look, the judgment was that at a time of a cost of living crisis and people are just, or a lot of people are just working much harder to kind of make ends meet, is that what's most important now is a sense of stability when it comes to the tax system and getting and working on lifting remuneration or what have you, that this wasn't a time for big or significant tax policy change. I think we all recognise that our tax system, there are still questions about how fair it is and how fairly distributed the our tax responsibilities are. I think also, given the public services that we have and that we aspire to, we do need to broaden our tax base. So there's a question of timing about how, if and when you introduce big tax change. But the judgment of the Prime Minister and this government is now's not the time for that, and that's effectively what he was saying yesterday.
So you've mentioned the need to strengthen our public services. What action might the government be taking to strengthen our public services, if not a wealth or capital gains tax?
Yeah, I think it's about looking at government revenue generally, and that's, you know, that's a question. It happens obviously every budget, but it happens outside of the budget process as well, as looking at how the government raises money. If it embarks on a new activity, how is it going to pay for it? So, you know, we have a range of levies and other things like that, particularly when it comes to transport and fuel levies and things like that. So we're constantly looking at that point. I think the bigger question, which is about the tax system generally, and given that the whole of the tax system has been reviewed a couple of times in the last sort of 10 or 15 years, it's a question about where we put various types of tax across the way people earn their income. And we haven't at this point committed to significant structural change in that respect. That's, I guess, what came out of this year's consideration of the issue. I think the other point the Prime Minister was making too, that there does need to be, you know, a sense of kind of social licence or the consent of the governed, and he wants to make sure that before any significant tax change is introduced, that there is a sense that people have had a say and that it is going to be largely supported.
Has the government considered increasing corporate tax rates?
Yeah, we did that. We increased the trustee tax rate, the trust tax rate, this year. It was out of line with the top marginal tax rate. We knew that some people were kind of sheltering their income and trust to get the benefit of that. We haven't had any particular proposals on the corporate tax rate in the time that we've been in government, but that comes up for review every budget year anyway when we think about the tax rates that we've got.
And just lastly, what can we expect from Labor's tax policy this election?
Well, I can't go into that because that tends to be an election manifesto promise, and that's a matter for the leader and relevant spokesperson at the time we are laying out our policies for the election. I expect that'll happen in the next sort of couple of months. We'll have to, because the elections were just over 3 months away. So look, that will be revealed in time for the election, but it's not for me to get ahead of that.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little discussing the government's response to the modern dawn raids and the calls for a wealth tax.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.